Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Hey, football fans, it's Andrew Filippone, host of the First and Pod podcast. Join me and my co-host, three-time All-Pro Patrick Peterson, as we break down every game every week. New episodes drop on Monday and Friday mornings. Be sure to subscribe on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Good morning, everybody. Happy Monday. I hope you all are back at it. No more hiding in the house. It's perfectly fine out there. Most of the snow is, would you say most snow is melted or melting or on the way out or whatever else, right?
It's mostly melted.
Cleared up. It was actually, let's be honest, it was throughout the entire episode. It wasn't ever really that treacherous to drive. Never did the whole melt, freeze, ice, solid ice thing. There were some slippery spots. Saturday night actually was a little bit slippery, but I was at the game. I went to the Tigers game on Saturday. It was perfectly fine getting down there. People had some trepidation about it, but it was perfectly fine getting down there. Now, it's going to be warmer this week, Jeffrey, warming up towards the later part of this week, and then cold again next week.
Can't wait.
So let me ask you this. It is, by the way, first full moon of the year tonight, if you pay attention to those sorts of things. I now pay... It's one of the things that's now that I'm married that my wife Claire, she always points out to me. I notice things like the moon, Jeffrey. I wasn't
reading your horoscope too.
No, she does tarot cards though. You know how I am. You know how I feel about tarot cards.
Not great.
Get them away from me.
Yep.
I'm always afraid. I've had people before too want to do my, read my whatever. You got to get out of it. No way. I'm afraid. I'll say okay, fine, do it. And you know what they'll do? They'll pull the death card.
Yep.
I'm quite convinced of it. So, and then I say, oh no, that's not how it works. You interpret them, you read them. It doesn't. No. I got no interest in tarot cards. Anyway, it is the first full moon of 2025 tonight. But I want to talk about this massive weekend we had in sports today on the radio show. We only got one guest, Chris Harrington, straight up at 10 o'clock. But I would ask you this. I was reading a piece today about how January is the worst month of the year. And I'll concede, not a great month for a lot of reasons. It's cold. It's long. It comes in the wake of Christmas. People are trying to be better than, you're embarked on this grim effort to be some better version of yourself. Maybe it's dry January for you or whatever it is. You just joined Crunch or whatever else.
You're paying off your credit
card bill.
So
you're paying off. Yeah. Here's another one. You're paying off your credit card bill. All the fun is over. Everyone has to get back down to work. And unlike February is kind of a slog too, cold, miserable, but at least it's short. You know, February, you don't have all 31 days to get through, whereas January just goes on and on and on and on and on. And then January comes with failure because about halfway through January, I forget which day they say is quitting day, but halfway through, you realize you're not going to be a better version of yourself. And so January's terrible. And yet, sports month, pretty good. NBA's cranking up, starts to feel serious, right?
Yep.
This doesn't apply to the Tigers, but for a lot of teams, conference play beginning in college basketball. I mean, we had some interesting conference games in the SEC over the weekend. Ole Miss gets another nice one. Tennessee gets another nice one. Mississippi State loses to Kentucky. Anyway, it's a reasonably interesting time in college hoops, and now we got NFL playoffs, and we have this weekend that you said last week, you made the point, this past weekend may be something that we look forward to as one of the best sports weekends of the year. So, is January terrible, and is it leavened at all by the fact that sports pretty damn good?
So, I think if you're making me pick between January and February, I'm picking give me January.
January better than February. February now is the Super Bowl.
Yeah, but like that's it. Then you get the depression of
the game. Oh, over. Everything ends.
Yeah, I mean,
and we haven't gotten to March yet, which is at least
Correct. Like, you're in that kind of, then you get into the slog of college basketball
post
where they're just
like all-star game, yeah, whatever. Yeah. So, okay, so February stinks.
Yes. February is my
least
favorite.
I think we can agree. February is terrible.
Yep. Because then you get to March and
but January also, okay, leaving sports aside, you do concede January is not fun.
Correct. But, like, those two are, like, the two for me just because I can't stand being cold.
And cold, okay.
And well, the
December,
days are
December like, also cold.
Yeah, but, like, and also, like, just, you can throw December in there, but, like,
It's got Christmas, man.
You've also, like, you just have, like, the holidays. And yeah, it's like, everybody's taking everything less seriously.
So?
The problem is, like, to your point, it's, like, once the holiday's in and you get back to January, it's, like, everybody decides, like, we're going to be heroes at
we
work.
Need, I guess the bottom line is we needed this past weekend, and I thought it was a really remarkable weekend. I was thinking about everything we're going to talk about today, and, you know, come July, you could pick any of 10 things that happened this weekend, and I would be thrilled to be able to spend a whole show talking about them.
Oh, yeah,
you,
absolutely.
You know what I mean? If we could just take one of the 10 things that happened this weekend and we could talk about it in July, that would be good because it was jam-packed. And so we are going to get more in-depth on all of this stuff, Jeffrey, but I wanted to start with the most striking things you saw this weekend. We'll start with three each. We may make the list longer, but I'm going to go first because it's the Jeff Calkins show. And listen, if you want to do this on the Jeffrey Wright and Company, be my guest. Mm-hmm. But on the Jeff Calkins show, I'm going first.
Yep.
I think the single most out of my seat moment that I saw, although I have it's close, was Jaws winning bucket. In fact, do we have Jaws winning? In fact, do we have Jaws last two buckets? Jaws started out 3 of 17 as the Grizzlies were locked into a tilt, a titanic tilt with the T-Wolves. Coming off a very disappointing loss to Houston, facing Houston again tonight. Here you're like, oh my God, could this be locked in a losing streak? And Jaws muddling along. He is 3 of 17. And then we had these two critical last buckets from Ja.
Grizzlies down two. Morant down the left side of the lane. In it, Gobert. Hanks. Banks and scores. Double clutch shot off the window to tie the game at 125.
So that one was magnificent.
Nice shot by Ja Morant. He's there when you needed him. That was a needy basket.
Absolutely.
Absolutely magnificent. But
not
was
this.
Of a type that we've seen. Like
yes.
The double pump.
Yep.
Ja. Take it. Like he literally went right in at Rudy Gobert. Large man.
Yes.
Right in at Ludwig.
They call him a rim protector, Jeff.
A rim protector. And double pumps, hangs in the air, says, Rudy, at some point you gotta start to descend. I don't.
Yep.
And puts it in to tie the game. And then we had this, which turned out to be the winner.
8 seconds remaining on the shot clock, 25.6 on the game clock. Wells breaks through. Morant gives it in for Clark. Back to Morant. Left sideline. Works into the paint. Morant, hesitation move to the baseline. Running floater with a right hand. Oh! He floats it up and in from 8 feet out. And the Grizzlies lead 127-125. A circus shot for Ja Morant on the left baseline. Gives the Grizzlies the advantage.
Oh, my God.
I almost, like, when he left it, I wondered if it was a mistake. Like, I was like, was he thinking someone was going to go and finish it? Because, like, it's like his whole body was going away. Like, and then you realize, like, no,
sort
that was
a
just
360 going away from the basket.
And then the moon ball just goes right in and you're just like, oh, my God.
Let me ask you this. Would you want him? You clearly would like the ball in his hands again. Would you want him to take that shot again? No. No, I would not. Like, that the shot does not seem like, even for Ja, a high percentage shot. He only had to do it once. He was one of one.
Correct. Like, if you're grading that, was that a great shot, you're definitely not putting the check mark next to it. But I guess it also just goes to, like, the larger point of Ja. It's like, man, when it comes winning time, the guy makes plays.
It was something else. And turned out to be, it really did. Now, we're in this period, and you've made the point before, that we shouldn't treat basketball games like they're football games.
Yes.
Right? Every single game is not a referendum. But we are at a period of the season that's starting to feel like a little bit of a referendum, right?
For sure.
A stretch of the season that is feeling to you got all three you got your three stars. You don't have the full the full roster back, but you got your three stars. You're playing other good teams in the West. there's this feeling that you might be a little bit of a fraud. That's the unkind way that some have put it. And you just get, let's be honest, that game against Houston was not as close as the final score indicated.
Totally agree.
You got bowled over by Houston. Now you're going into Minnesota. And by the way, Minnesota was unbelievable offensively. Minnesota shot 57% from the field. Minnesota hit 17 three-pointers, 37 assists. Jaden McDaniels, 9 of 12. Dante DiVincenzo, 27 points, 10 rebounds, 7 assists. Naz Reid, 5 of 7 from 3. They were lighting it up, and you went toe-to-toe with them and then came out with the W, and now you go into Houston. You've got another shot at Houston. I just thought it was a massive win for the Grizzlies. Of course, it only counts for one, and had they lost, the season would not have been over, but That was one that stands out.
Yeah, I'm with you because when you were watching the game, at least this is how I felt, I kept thinking, like, how are they still in this? Because the level of shot making from Minnesota definitely felt like it was a higher level. Not that the Grizzlies weren't making shots. It just felt like the volume coming from Minnesota was at a higher level. It was one of those games, though, where sometimes numbers can lie, but when I went and looked, like, deeper,
they realize 25 more shots than the Timberwolves. That's how they were in it,
like, and they forced more turnovers.
Yeah, so they forced
second chance opportunities.
They forced 19 turnovers, scored 27 points off of turnovers. They had about a million offensive rebounds, 21, I think. They had 25 more shots. That's kind of crazy. They had 25 more shots, and in the end, the T-Wolves missed those last two shots at the end.
Yep,
but the two prior possessions, they turned the ball over.
Correct.
And so that's really what cost them the game. But there were a lot of, in addition to Ja sort of, and Ja didn't look great all game long. Like Ja, like he was missing everything. Let's be honest. But in addition to that, you had Jaren being Jaren.
Yep.
Like he's been looking incredible. Unstoppable. Another 33 points. Dez was really good. You had Zach Edey, who you'd worried about a little bit, or I had, because of the way he played against Houston and before that, unplayable really against Dallas. He comes in 20 minutes. He gets 8 points, 9 rebounds, really outplayed in his minutes, really outplayed Rudy Gobert. So you had Zach Edey. And then you had the tremendous defensive play by Brandon Clark on Ant at the end.
Yep.
Honestly, first goes out, forces Randall to catch it past the 3-point line, then switches, great switch on Anthony Edwards, and it's funny, over at The Athletic, there's a whole piece about what a devastating loss this was. Like, this has caused inner scrutiny for Minnesota.
Sure.
Like, this is a team that beats us all the time, that beat us in the playoff series. There's no way we should have lost this game, and yet we did. It's caused sort of a crisis of self-examination. And Anthony Edwards was bad. He had this sort of Ja-esque game, and he didn't salvage it. He couldn't salvage it by making big shots at the end. He was 4 of 13, 0 of 5 from 3. Jalen Wells did a magnificent job on Jalen Wells, who had a bad game against Houston as well, did a magnificent job on Anthony Edwards. That was the best thing I saw this weekend, in an extraordinary weekend. Over to you, Jeffrey. Give me one.
All right. The best thing,
or the most notable thing, or the I'm most striking, like, the thing. You thing can define most, it however you wish.
I'm going to say the most inexplicable. Tyler Johnson's touchdown catch yesterday. I still have no idea, A, how he caught it, B, how he was in bounds.
Are you convinced that he... So this is... Bills at this point, by the way, they're only up 13-7.
Yes, it's fourth down.
It's fourth down. So if fourth and one, they go for it. If he does not catch that ball, all of a sudden it's a one score, one touchdown game late in the third quarter. You're giving the Broncos, I mean, in the end, it turned out to be a rout, but you're giving the Broncos life. And instead,
but I think this plays why it turned into a rout. This is just massive
backbreaker. And then they got the 2-pointer after that. So are you convinced that he both caught it and kept his foot? I wasn't. I didn't know. I didn't think it was overturnable, but it wasn't clear to me that his foot did not touch the white.
So
in the back of the end,
I was actually more clear that his feet stayed in. The one that I had the biggest hesitation on, did he catch it? But then they kept showing that sideline angle right. from the end zone, and it looks like his hands are underneath it. Because like the ball can hit the ground as long as your hands are underneath it and you have control right. and it yes. doesn't move. That one angle, you don't really see the ball move.
Right. Yeah, that was.
But like, there's so many things on that play that I still have no idea how he did it.
And then he ran about a million miles.
Yeah.
I think 70 yards. He ran
insane.
On that. Yeah, underplayed player for the Bills. Terrific player for the Bills. Bills in the end, it didn't feel like they routed the Denver in the same way that the Ravens routed the Steelers. Obviously now everyone's looking forward to Bills Ravens this weekend except for me. But it's interesting. Bills outgained the Broncos by 247 yards, which is the most by a team in the NFL playoffs in 10 years. So it was, in fact, a complete rout. Now, do you think I enjoyed the game? Do you think I watched it from beginning to end?
No.
No, and I'll tell you why. I said, all right, I'm a big boy. I can sit down and watch a football
uh-huh.
game. This
and
isn't
the first
a problem.
Drive.
And literally within four freaking plays, they hit the bomb, and I'm like, okay, that's enough of that. Turn it off. I did later return, but it took some doing. Anyway, all right. Sorry, that was the most inexplicable thing you saw. The second thing that the most holy crap got me out of my seat, and this almost feels like a long time ago, was the Jack Sawyer strip sack to win the game for Ohio State. And of course, if you haven't heard, it was on Quinn Ewers, who was his roommate when Quinn Ewers played for Ohio State. You probably heard that a thousand times.
When he
times.
Was on the Ohio State team.
When he was, well, yes, okay, when he was a Buckeye. He was
when
a
he
Buckeye.
Was, when he was taking when some NIL cash was, from,
right,
from
okay,
Ohio State.
Fine, exactly. Jack Sawyer was his roommate. Texas, give him all the credit in the world, makes a game of this. Like, if you, I don't know, everyone thought it would be a game. Texas makes a game of this. And they're in position to get the tying score. Obviously, there's a lot of attention on the second down play, right? It's first and goal from the one.
Yep. Because the penalty occurred in the end zone, yeah.
First down, they've tried to run up the middle, get nothing.
Yep.
Second down, the pitch, lose 7 yards.
Yep. Crack toss is the play they tried to run.
Crack toss is the play they tried to win. Are you critical of Texas and Sark for that call?
So another, like my second thing that I wrote from the weekend, it's not just Texas. I saw this all over. Teams just getting too cute. Like in the end, one of my good friends, he was an offensive lineman on our high school team. And he's like, sometimes they'd call in the play on first and goal from like the two. And we just ignore it. He's like, we're running quarterback sneak, and we just sneak it until we got in. I just do not understand. Like, I don't know if it's a Quinn Ewers thing. Like, he doesn't feel comfortable getting under center or whatnot. Like, I just do not understand. The worst thing that can happen on a quarterback sneak from the one is no game.
Is it then third?
Correct.
From the one. Right.
Correct. Like, and now you can push people in.
Right. And you literally open the door to exactly what happened.
Correct.
It is one of the real, it's not even some wild probability. It's a, it
no,
is.
Like, Ohio State was selling out to stop that.
To stop that.
Like, you watch, like, that was.
It was a hideous call.
They showed the end zone cam view. Jeff, that play wasn't going to work no matter what. Like, they were asking an offensive lineman to block a linebacker coming from the other side full speed. Like, that play was never going to work.
Call. Hideous. It was a hideous call. And so then you had the next on fourth down, Jack Sawyer with the strip sack
and like that
83 yards.
Like that was okay. They were trying to run a double move. They were trying to run a double move, by the way, from the 7 yard line or 8 yard line where there's not a ton of space and you don't have a ton of time. Like, okay. Like, you know what I mean? Like to me, it's like the game was lost well before that. Like, I give Sawyer credit. Like, that was an unbelievable play. But like the right tackle.
It was just the cherry on top.
Yes.
It was the cherry on top. Okay. So what is your takeaway for Ohio State and from Texas from that game? And where is, well, maybe we'll revisit this later. We'll revisit this later. Any other takeaways from that game in particular?
Yeah, I think the other takeaway I have is it's fascinating to me how playoff sports really do expose, like, your one weakness is always going to come back to bite you. Texas has been a very good team all year, but one of their biggest struggles has been the red zone and particularly red zone offense, and we saw it all night. Like, they were really struggling in the red zone. They could move the ball, it felt like 30 to 30 pretty easily, but then they would just stall out. And to me, like, when you get into these situations and you have to have it, if it's a flaw, it just exposes itself.
Okay, give me another one.
I think the 75-yard screen pass might be one of the worst defensive plays I've ever seen in the history of college football. Like, there's 40 seconds, right?
Right.
At the 25-yard line. I still don't even know, like, how it worked. It almost just looked like when they couldn't believe they ran a screen pass, and then I guess nobody just pursued the football. But it was one of those ones where it's like you looked up and it wasn't even that difficult. It's like he made one guy miss and it was gone. And it's like, what are you doing on the sidelines? There's 40 seconds left. Keep everything in front. That to me was a game-changing, back-breaking play because Texas had exerted so much effort and energy to get that touchdown to tie right. it up. And then you felt like, okay, and tie up, ball game, let's go to the right, half, yep. Like, let's see it. But then when Ohio State was able to quickly okay, get
but
that
don't
lead.
You, big picture, don't you feel like Texas, if you're Texas, don't you feel pretty good about yourself? You were the last team standing in the SEC, and you got Arch next year. And it was a good year, right? Don't you feel pretty damn good about yourself if you're Texas?
Yeah, I think that's
and by the way, you lost to an Ohio State team that is the presumptive national championship. I'll ask you this too. If you're a Tennessee fan, are you now feeling like, okay, you guys are like, we got blown out. We got blown out by a team that's blowing out. Okay, they didn't blow out Texas. That's beating everybody, is going to win the national championship. At least that's what people think. It's a 9.5-point line right now, I think, with Notre Dame a week from today. Do you feel better? Do you feel good if you're a Tennessee fan? And do you feel better about yourself? I mean, do you feel good if you're a Texas fan and feel better about yourself if you're a Tennessee fan?
I mean, I think if you're a Texas fan, you feel good in this era because you have a clear advantage. You are richer than almost ever.
You're back.
Like,
you're
so
back.
You have that advantage. But what I would always point out is, like, you never know how many real opportunities
That's
and
true.
Shots you get. And in my mind, maybe we'll find out Notre Dame's just going to be that team that we can't really explain them, but maybe they are that great team. Like, they're, to me, like, I've used the example, maybe they're 2001 Ohio State, where.
That Notre Dame is?
Yeah. The team okay. that beat Miami in the right. Fiesta Bowl, where clearly they had great players. Like, let's not kid ourselves. Notre Dame has NFL talent. This is not the little engine that could, but at the level that Ohio State has great players, Notre Dame does not have that. And so maybe we'll find out, but you're Texas and you had them on the ropes and they were starting to feel the pressure. Will Howard was getting sacked for the first time in, I think they said, four games. And you had it right there. And how many times, like...
So you think they should really be lamenting this?
Oh, yeah. Like, you had them on the right. Like, you had a chance to win a title. Because I think we're going to look back, and that was the title game. In the same way that we look back last year, really, the title game was Alabama-Michigan. Like, I think we're going to look back and realize, like, that was the title game.
All right, another one from me, one of the most striking things I saw. So I went to the Memphis Tiger basketball game Saturday, and it was, as I said, I understand some of you are hesitant, and I'm not, you know, trying to shame you for being careful, but it was fine. Like, the driving was fine. The walking from the post office, I mean, from the parking lot was fine. Everything was fine. They did shut off the terrace. They pulled down the screens and shut off yeah. the terrace and had people go downstairs, which I thought was the right call for the University of Memphis, created a little better atmosphere. And then Memphis goes up by 18, and then Memphis finds themselves in a position to lose a game. And if you are one to draw parallels to the last time there was an ice game, the last time The crowd was smaller because of the wintry weather. That happened last year against South Florida. Same thing. Memphis went up large in the first half. Memphis collapsed. Memphis ended up losing that game. All of this gets me to the point, to the thing that was striking to me. You can focus all you want on the fact that they should be doing a better job blowing out these teams, and that is true. You can focus all you want on the turnovers or the lack of poise in the second half or the lack of effort that created, I mean, all that, you know, second chance points, 14-8 second chance points in favor of East Carolina, 24-18 in terms of points off of turnovers in favor of East Carolina. But what really strikes me is how comfortable I felt with PJ Haggerty at the line. Like, this is a program where there has been long-standing trauma around free throws.
Sure.
Right? Certainly harkening back to the national championship game. But just generally, free throws in college scare the hell out of you anyway.
Yeah, for sure.
Right? And then for this program, given the history of free throws, also scares the hell out of you. John Calipari will make them when they count. And there's PJ Haggerty. And in this game, when things are falling apart, you've dribbled away an 18-point lead. He goes to the line in the final moments, and you just have faith. I even have faith, even though on the call, I was there for the first half, the second half of the game. Maybe it's my fault. I was not. On the call, they were like, oh, he's a perfect 8-for-8. And it's like, oh, that's the jinx now. He doesn't get jinxed. It really feels like he is shooting foul shots at the Finch Center on a Tuesday.
In practice, you're watching him like, he's going to like shoot 100 and he's going to try to make 100.
Like 98, 99, or 100 of them.
I totally agree.
And maybe I'm jinxing him long term, but my God, it is comforting to have a guy like that. 25 points, 10 of 10. In fact, we've gotten to the point that I almost resent it in the final moments when anyone else has the ball in their hands. Tyrese Hunter, I trust too, but then beyond that, when they're doing other stuff, Colby Rogers fouled out of this game, but I guess I trust any of them. But the level of trust that I have watching PJ Haggerty play basketball is a real comfort. Now, I believe they will lose conference games, and John and I sort of part ways here because I think what they're trying to do is really hard. Perfection is hard. Not being bored is hard. Just look at what happened. They're all week long, we had heard, we have to focus. We can't take teams for granted. We got to work on turnovers. We have to do all this stuff. Can't be bored. You're going to set yourself. All week long, we'd heard that. And yet when you're up 18, apparently effortlessly, I think what they're trying to do is contrary to human nature.
Yeah.
What they're trying to do is contrary to human nature, and they will get caught up. They will play some road games they will lose. UAB's looking like they've figured some things out. Those games could be tougher. I think they lose 3 games in conference.
So I'd set the over-under.
At 2.5?
Yeah.
So that's why I'm taking the mild. I don't think it's going to be. I'm not saying last year.
Yeah, yeah.
Painting that. I just think what they're trying to do is contrary to human nature. But if they're going to pull it off, win 2 or 1 or 0, PJ Haggerty is maybe the reason.
Well, and then on top of that, like, they do have, like, because of the nature of the conference, there's tough road games. There's a lot of tough travel. Like, you're going to go to,
I don't know if you've heard this, they're every team's Super Bowl.
Yeah, but, like, on top of that, it's like, you know, getting to some of these places.
Or just getting there. Yeah. Getting there, cold gym, whatever else.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. And there's just not, some of these places have no atmosphere, whatnot. Like, it's tough to just get yourself up night after night after night. So I tend to agree with you. I think my biggest take, and I've kind of already been there, but it's just like, PJ Haggerty's a winning basketball player. And I think we didn't know that coming.
You said this contrary to David Jones last year.
And, like, I don't think we knew that coming into the season because I think one of the big questions was how much of his numbers were just stats on a bad basketball team? And what I feel confident saying now is like that the guy makes winning basketball plays.
It was funny. There was a SI, which is not SI anymore, right? I mean, let's be honest. Sports Illustrated is not Sports Illustrated. The Sports Illustrated of your youth, certainly it's not the Sports Illustrated of my youth. They had something on NIL valuations of players and what players, what their NIL valuation is. I saw this piece. And P.J. Haggerty's was the fifth highest in the country.
Yeah, I can buy that.
But I don't think they know what he's making. I think it's some abstract valuation. I don't like. Do we know? We don't have any. We don't have any sense.
No, I don't think it's based on like what. But I think the idea is somebody of his size, his length, his scoring potential, his efficiency. Like that's going to be a highly valued player.
One of the nice things is you think about it because he's got years left of eligibility, yeah. Right? You think, oh, this is great. He doesn't have to be a, you know, he doesn't have to be a one and done. Of course, in this day and age, everybody is potentially a one and done. Like
everybody's potentially a one game, hell, one game and done.
Yeah, who the hell wouldn't want P.J. Haggerty on their team next year, right? So it'll be Penny will want him back, unquestionably. We're getting ahead of ourselves. What I really wanted to emphasize was the degree of calm I have.
Yeah, I totally agree with
watching
that.
P.J. Haggerty play basketball. We're going to take a break. We'll come back with more of this because, my God, what a weekend of sports it was. We got Chris Harrington, who was in the building in Minnesota. He'll join us straight up at 10 o'clock. Before then, I will tell you the semi-annual sale is on at Oak Hall. And we're gonna expect more cold weather this week, more cold weather, honestly, next week. And so this is the moment. I'm wearing a beautiful sweater from Oak Hall right now, actually. But fall and winter merchandise, men's and women's, on sale. Honestly, it's like a tailored clothes as well there. So you want a new sport coat, spiff up your wardrobe in this gloomy January. You can do that, too. Best savings of the year. You got everyone else stuff for Christmas. Time to get yourself something. Taking advantage of the best savings of the year on men's and women's fall and winter merchandise. Head on over this week. Put it on your list. Head on over to see our friends at Oak Hall. Take a break. Back in a moment. Jeff Calkins Show, 92.9 FM ESPN. All right, back on the Jeff Calkins Show. We got Chris Harrington coming up in the next segment. He was in the house as the Grizzlies defeated the Timberwolves. They got Houston tonight. They were already itching to get back to play the Rockets after last week's loss to the Rockets, and so we'll get to see that unfold tonight. In the meantime, we are continuing to talk about what a remarkable sports weekend it was as we've gone down some of the highlights. I got another one here, Jeffrey, and mine was watching the Ravens disembowel the Steelers in a totally one-sided fashion. I mean, that game, it ended up looking closer, but it was 21 zip at one point. At one point, it was 308 yards to 59. It feels like to me, again, Bills did a number on the Broncos too. It feels like to me, everyone's going to be picking the Ravens this week. There's a reason they should be picking the Ravens this week. And there's some serious questions about Mike Tomlin and the Steelers going forward. Start with the Ravens side of it. How compelling are they the best team in the AFC?
So I still don't think they're the best team in the AFC. I will say that one of my notes was the Ravens finally realizing what they are in a playoff game to me was.
They didn't try to throw the ball a million times.
I mean, there
times.
Was one touchdown drive where I don't think they threw a pass.
Like Lamar had 175 yards throwing, which is perfect.
Yes, he was awesome.
81 yards rushing,
and like another, I thought a huge play in that game because I'm with you. Like, even though the Steelers like cut it to 14, it felt like every time the Ravens were going to have to go score, they could go and do it. Like they kept them at arm's length.
You could imagine a Ravens-Eagles Super Bowl. And it's all because these two franchises walked away from Derrick Henry and Saquon Barkley. They would not be the same teams but for Derrick Henry and Saquon Barkley.
I totally agree. And to me, like, the other big thing, though, with the Ravens was I felt like in so many of these playoff games, like, Kaylee Hartung said she'd spoken with Lamar, and he felt antsy and antsy. It's like, I don't think that was it. It was almost like they were just trying to prove we can win a game with Lamar throwing the football. Lamar threw the football plenty fine, but they didn't have to win it with him throwing the football. They won it with him and Derrick Henry saying, you want to stop this, be our guest.
It's a tremendous team. Derrick Henry is a monster. And if you look at the Bills-Ravens this weekend, or you'll look at the last time they played, it was 35-10, and it was Derrick Henry with 24 rushes, 199 yards in that game. You also look, I mean, everyone's going to say this is a referendum on Josh and Lamar, and if Josh can win this game, I guess it will be, because I think, even though they're the home team, and right now they're favored by 1.5, but I actually, that's already started. I think they opened at 2, maybe, and I think it's already started to move, the money coming in on the Ravens. Just, again, we saw 9 Pro Bowlers to 2 Pro Bowlers, yeah. Ravens, and now the All-Pro team has come out. Ravens have 4 first-team All-Pro players. Bills have 0, including Lamar, by the way, first-team All-Pro, Josh Knott. And then they've got 2 second-team All-Pros, and the only second-team All-Pro the Bills have is Josh. Literally, the Bills have 1 All-Pro, and the Ravens have 6, 4 on the first team, 2 on the second team. I think it's a tremendous team. It is kind of amazing to think there they were a couple years ago in a contract dispute with Lamar. No one seemed to make a move for Lamar. It felt like, what's happening with this franchise? And here they are. Maybe I think the best team in the AFC.
Yeah, I am also leaving room for the Steelers might just be a mess. Like, because in the end, like, the Steelers, I believe the note is they have the highest paid defense in the NFL. And, like, yes, their offense wasn't good, but it wasn't like their defense was. I didn't feel the same way that, like, yesterday with the Packers, I felt like the offense was letting the defense down. Because I think the defense played well enough to, if not win the game,
certainly
make that a one-score game, whatnot. But the offense was just putrid, and they let them down. I didn't feel like that was the case. I didn't feel like the Steelers' defense was playing all that well. But I do think there's also, like, the question for me of, you mentioned that Ravens-Bills game earlier in the year. Well, one of the things that, like, stood out was the Bills thought they could stop the running game playing the same way that they always do.
The Bills always play the same way.
Now, no Milano.
There was no Milano, there was no Terrell Bernard, there was no Taron Johnson, and Khalil Shakir went out in the first quarter. So if you want to talk, and it wasn't at home.
Correct.
So if you want to talk yourself into it, you can. I honestly think, I don't think the Bills, and this has been true generally about the Bills throughout this run, they have a very good regular season defense because they have very good coaches, and they have defensive coaches, they're well schemed, they're well coached, whatever else. They got some good players. Who on that defense is a massive who destroys you? Like, who do you have to really worry about? Nobody. The answer there is nobody. I think they're going to get run over.
Yeah, I mean, to me, it becomes a question of, are they going to be able to stop the run game? If the earlier matchup is any indication, the answer is no. And so it's
can you outscore them?
Correct.
Which is, I
because the Ravens defense is not.
All right, so onward to Tomlin, though.
Yeah.
Is it time? Is it time to mutually part ways, Tomlin and the Steelers? Obviously, you know the stats. 18 years, been to 2 Super Bowls, won one, never had a losing season, but lost 5 in a row to end this season, and 6 straight losses in the playoffs. Have not won a playoff game since 2016. It feels like the Grizzlies at the end of the Zebo Mark tenure, right? How are they now? You could argue, well, the Ravens, they were in this position a few years ago where you're wondering what's going to happen. If you do the right tinkering, you pick up a Derrick Henry, you pick up a Saquon Barkley. Look at the Eagles at the end of last year. you do the right tinkering, things fall the right way in an offseason, things can change. I don't know. Mike Tomlin keeps them good enough that they're never bad enough to get a quarterback.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of the whole issue is I don't think this is really a Mike Tomlin stat. I think this is a Ben Roethlisberger and post-Ben Roethlisberger stat. Like, Ben Roethlisberger in 2016, like, that's the end of his career. Like, he wasn't good. And so the bigger problem that I keep seeing is they do not have a quarterback. And, like, they tried it with Pickett. That didn't work. Then they've tried to do, like, this veteran, bring someone in. Like, in the end, like, Russ just, he's not very good right now.
Russ is not very good right now. And you tell me what's the answer. Like, if it's not Russ, is it Aaron Rodgers? Would you rather?
I mean, I'd rather have Aaron Rodgers than Russ, but I don't think that's the answer.
Go to Atlanta and make a deal?
I'd rather take the Achilles and I'd rather take the Achilles and gamble on Rodgers than gamble on Kirk, because I think Kirk's problem is he never had the arm to begin with, and now that his body's letting him down, the arm's even weaker.
It is funny. It's amazing. After the season that Aaron Rodgers had, and the way that he's literally put an anchor around that Jets franchise for the last 2 years, of the available quarterbacks, if I'm the Steelers and I did run it back with Mike Tomlin, I don't think there's a quarterback I'd rather have than Aaron Rodgers, because at least I can imagine a ceiling with him that you know he would not be able to take over the culture.
Correct.
Right?
Exactly.
The culture will be Tomlin's culture. I think it's time, in the same way that when Andy Reid left the Eagles, maybe it was time, right? And I think Tomlin has a no-trade clause in his contract, whatever. If you were Tomlin, wouldn't you rather go and coach Jacksonville or the Cowboys or whoever else? And if you're the Steelers, wouldn't you like, we just can't keep doing this. Like, it's not that satisfying.
If I'm Tomlin, there's probably in me, like, a little of careful what you wish for, I'll show you.
Right.
But at the same time, like, the Steelers job's a really good job. I mean, you know, he's not really in jeopardy of getting fired. Like, you can coach there basically till you decide you're not going to coach there anymore.
They will not and cannot and should not fire him.
Correct.
That would be absurd. And the truth of the matter is, if you move on from Mike Tomlin, you will, I'm going to say this, in the next 5 years, miss the playoffs at least 1 or 2 years, right?
That's likely.
You will have the bad years that make you wonder, wasn't it more fun when we had Mike Tomlin, right? But maybe the argument is you have to be that bad in order to be good again.
Yeah, I mean, I think the like, when we talk about our takes from the weekend, like, are the larger notes, it's like, how many really good quarterbacks are there? I think we all feel pretty confident in saying Mahomes.
Well, that's the other striking moment. We're talking about striking moments over the weekend, right? And for me, one of the striking moments was sitting there watching Justin Herbert throw that pick six and thinking to myself, you know what? Sometimes I'm hard on Jeffrey during our radio, our program. Sometimes I disagree.
Mm-hmm.
But my God, did you, like, he absolutely in that game was what you have always said he is. Guy threw three interceptions during the course of the season and throws four yesterday.
Yeah, and, like, I'll even grant him one wasn't his fault.
No.
I will also point out, guy throws a very uncatchable ball. Like, he is the, I always love him, he leads the league in drops. Yeah, he throws everything as hard as he can. Like, he is new Jeff George. Like, toolsy, has everything, like, he's clearly a gifted human being. I've never once denied that. Playing quarterback is more than just having tools. Like, in the end, he has never embraced, like, keep the chains moving. Like, one thing that I really was impressed with Josh, and yes, at times they didn't finish the drives, but the thing that was, I think, discouraging, and you could hear it from Sean Payton's voice when they interviewed him at halftime, like, he took the soul out of Denver because they just never had the ball. And every time they got the ball, it felt like, we've got to go do something. Like, Josh understands, keep it moving.
Bills had it 41 minutes and 43 seconds.
Just keep it moving.
They held the ball, yeah.
if, like, you know what I mean? Like, and in the end, that was a huge part
of. It was interesting. They actually, something like a quarter of their plays yesterday, they had six offensive linemen on the field.
Yeah.
That's a format. They just said, screw this. And by the way, this is a very good Denver defense, a defense that stops the run.
And, like, I used this the same thing last night with the Bucks. Dan Quinn, they had the note on the sideline. He's like, hey, listen, they're a ball control team. Like, I've been going for it a lot more than I'm comfortable this year. Like, I'm really going for it this year because we don't know how many times we're going to have the ball. And where I give the Commanders credit is, God, it felt like they made the most of it.
We'll get to that game in a minute. Let me ask you this, though. A critical game from the Bills-Denver game. Critical question from the Bills-Denver game. What do you think of the Broncos' pants?
So
lurid. It's like so crazy orange. Like, there was a question on Bills radio today asked, what will people remember from that game? And the answer was how bright the Broncos' pants were.
Yeah,
Too much.
I just think this all goes back to the year 2000. I can't explain it. When kids ask, we decided that navy was the color of the future. And two iconic uniform combinations were lost for far too long. Why the Broncos ever changed their jerseys? Like, every time they wear the, you know, the Elway throwbacks, you're just sitting like, man, that's a great uniform. And the Rams. What were the Rams doing when they went to, like, navy and gold? Like, no, just stick with it. We decided, like, navy was the color of the future.
Rams were...
Remember they have, like, those blue... Like, it's similar to what they wear now, but, like, they've kind of changed...
The blue is different.
They've changed, like, the design of the Ram horns. But it's like, those jerseys were awesome. Why ever get rid of those? And the Broncos are in the same category. Like, those old AFL Broncos uniforms are great uniforms.
This was totally ridiculous. And
I do not like when you wear orange pants and the navy helmet. It looks weird.
It is interesting. College playoffs and NFL playoffs play out very similarly this year in that the wild card round, largely one-sided, we knew what was going to happen. It did happen, with the exception of the Commanders win, and that was a game, let's be honest, that people thought would be a toss-up anyway.
One team had 12 wins and the other team had 10.
And the truth of the matter is that we don't take either team particularly seriously. No. And so, but then you're looking forward to a massive weekend next weekend.
Yes.
College football, the same thing happened. Last round was like, we'll see what happens. One of the games turned out to be good, whatever. Like the occasional game, Arizona State, Texas was really good, but most weren't good. And then we got led up to the semifinals, which were tremendous.
Yes. And the quarterfinals would have been better if we would have reseeded like we do in the NFL.
Yeah.
So if we would have just taken, you know.
By the way, I was impressed. People wondered how neutral, you know, having those games, the two semifinal games at neutral stadiums. Are fans going to keep traveling? Should you do it, you know, should you be playing home games all the way up until the championship game? Those two stadiums were full.
Yes. I don't know. I just still wish we'd do it like the NFL. Like, make the title game neutral and then feel like, I understand the politics but...
It's bull stuff.
Yeah.
All right, we got Chris Harrington coming up next. He was there as the Grizzlies defeated the Timberwolves. We'll talk to him about that and tonight's game against the Rockets, the rematch after the last two losses to the Rockets. In the meantime, I will remind you, if you are selling your house in 2025, call Josh Hysaw. Sit down with him, you'll see. Same way, when I sat down with him, I'm like, oh, I get it. I see why people have been talking about Josh Hysaw the way they have for so long. 901-461-8147, 901-461-8147. Josh and his team at Keller Williams Realty. A lot of times when you're selling your house, particularly if you're upgrading your house, maybe you need a bigger house, you're going to have to sell your house first, because otherwise you get the situation that Jeffrey had, where you've bought a house and you have your other house, and Jeffrey's, by the way, apparently, knock on everything, finally sold his house. But anyway, James was dealing with the situation, gets in touch with, finds his dream house, but he's like, what are we going to do now? Puts his house on the market because of Josh's creative, aggressive marketing strategies. Within 3 days, they had found a buyer at a great price. That's how working with Josh Hysaw can work. Flexible fees, no upfront costs, let you out of your contract at any time risk-free. Once again, it's Josh Heisa and the team at Keller Williams Realty, 901-461-8147. Chris Harrington coming up next, Jeff Dawkins Show, 92.9 FM ESPN.